This hour is being brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
The Bernstein and Holmes Show.
I am returning something to the grocery store. I wanted to know if you guys ever do that.
Because Dan's your man for this.
Oh, I don't have time for this. I have to go buy a single piece of fruit with a coupon and then return it, making people wait behind me while I complain.
I went to the grocery store. I needed some kind of cheese for something we were making. I just grabbed it, bought it, got it home, saw that it had expired like 10 days earlier, and saw there were some blue spots on it.
I'm going to return this.
You're returning used fruit? Jerry, this peach is subpar.
They should also know about that.
Somehow at the grocery store by my house, this is once a month I get home and find something's expired. I just want to ask the manager, what's the deal?
This merits a letter.
It really does.
The highest up the chain I could get was the assistant to the regional manager.
And everybody's going to complain and bitch, and I don't want to have to deal with it.
And that's why you have an assistant regional manager.
Yes, it is. Assistant to the regional manager.
Same thing.
It's not.
The guy's answer was basically, well, it's really hard running a grocery store.
Hey, you don't know how hard I got it, pal. You don't know how tough it is being me.
What is so difficult about your life?
Yeah, try walking a mile in my shoes once in a while, then talk to me.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 a.m. till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Layla, you're up very high this morning. Do you need help?
Okay.
Do you want to sit that high?
I wonder what it's like sometimes to be this tall. My feet are probably 2.5 feet off the ground.
There's a part of me that feels like you don't have enough weight to push the chair down.
Oh, no, I do. But I wonder, like, are my calves better because I have to stand up for everything and be on my toes? Like, would my back be worse if I were tall because I'd have to lean down for stuff?
I always hate sitting in chairs where my feet aren't touching something because I always feel like there's like a... I don't know.
Hold on.
Like the dangling aspect of it. Oh, there you go.
Okay, that's better.
All right, you feel better?
Yeah, the air's thinner up there. I can't do it.
See, now you know you can't be David Haw.
I think, well, also, we've talked about this. Like, I dated not one, but 2 6'4" guys. And I'm like, why did I do this? And I don't care. Like, I don't care about, we've talked about this in height discussions. Like, my ex-husband's 5'9". That was fine. At least we could hear each other speak. Like, sometimes they would say stuff, and I'm like, I have no idea what they said, because
it just went straight over me.
Yeah.
Over you. Welcome, everyone, to the Bernstein and Holmes Show. It's
My
Lawrence and Layla.
Up all the time.
Yeah. Strain. We are here with you until Cubs baseball, Cubs versus Marlins. I am going to go ahead and apologize right now for what my voice sounds like.
Smelly cat, what are they feeding you?
The allergies are kicking my butt.
Well, just do what Phoebe did on Friends and lean into the raspy.
I don't know if I can get to that raspy, but I'll be all right. You know, it'll be good. My energy is good, and I feel good other than being a little stuffy. So I want to acknowledge that before we get started. I'll have to work at the lower registers of my voice today. Get into my Optimus Prime
cool part.
Thing.
Like, that's fun.
It's been bad. Thanks, everyone, over at One Camp. I'm not Batman. I'm Batman!
That's my favorite thing ever.
I'm Batman!
Because that's 100% how I would say it on purpose.
So great. Camp One Step last night through a great poker event. It was really, really fun. I was the first celebrity bounty kicked out of the tournament. I played for an hour, but then I was like, oh, it's for the kids. So I rebought back in.
Nice.
And then made it all the way through the first break. And then I was done.
What time did you crazy kids wrap up last night?
I left around 9:30 because I had, like, my social anxiety went haywire.
Oh, yeah.
Last night.
Because
so
of the
I was
pizza
like,
incident?
No, it wasn't just that. There were a lot of people who showed love, and it was hard to accept all of that love.
Lawrence.
Because it was like, it was a lot. It was, hey, I got you a bottle of rum. I got you a card. I got, like, it was.
They came with gifts?
Yeah. I don't even think I know that I didn't get the bottle of rum, but it was just weird. It was, so, you know, like, every time that I would find a quiet space, that quiet space would be invaded. It was almost like an invitation. Like, oh, Lawrence is by himself.
Oh, like we're talking to baseball players in a locker room?
Well,
clubhouse.
Someone described
football players in the locker room when they're by themselves. You're like, hey,
exactly.
I need a soundbite from you.
Someone described it to me as someone said to me that it's like what happens to them as a woman, where if I have someone with me, then people for the most part leave me be. But once they see that I'm alone, then they strike.
Interesting. I never thought about that.
Yeah.
I'm always hanging out with friends when I'm in public. I don't go to bars or anything by myself.
It was a really interesting observation. I was like, that's true. I do get approached more when it's one. And I get it. Like, hey, like there he is. Like, let's talk.
I have an idea for you, but I'll tell you offline.
Well, I did tapping and all sorts of other stuff. So,
I have something different.
Should I be mean to people?
No, not at all.
Because I don't enjoy that. It's not who I am.
No, I think you got to do the Law and Order. You know, whenever they want to interview witnesses on Law and Order, the witnesses are always on the move, man.
I got to start moving.
But I was like, you know how the witnesses will be like, I got to go.
But I was
eating
pizza.
And you're like, wait, witness, you have all this information. Why are you so inconvenienced when police are approaching you about somebody having been killed? Like, doesn't life matter to you? And you know me, I'm an extrovert, so I don't mind it. Because I'm like, oh, that's nice that they were talking to me. Kind of like how I'm not offended by late text messages. I'm like, oh, that was nice that they texted me.
I'm an extroverted introvert.
I'm just like, oh, that was nice of you guys to reply. I don't care when. Neat.
See, that was the beauty of being in radio.
Oh, before, you get to control things?
No, but I guess technically, like before, like people didn't really know who you were or what you were. I appreciate this texture. Lawrence, if I ever see you, I won't approach you. You can approach. It's just, all I'm saying is that if it's a one-off, like if I see someone on the street, it's fine. I have a thing with crowds already. So when you add crowds into multiple people, like coming up to you as you're taking, like, think of it this way. I was getting away from the crowds to manage my crowd anxiety.
Yes.
And then while I was trying to manage my crowd anxiety, my boundary anxiety popped up. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I have a discussion that I would like to have offline about it. I know we were supposed to talk about the Bulls in this segment.
We can.
And we have a packed show, so I don't want to disrespect
We should get to the Bulls and talk to them right now. We can talk about this at some other...
Actually, it might fit into our don't be that guy at 11:40.
Oh, yeah. Texas says, Lawrence, I specifically didn't say hi to you last night when you were having a cookie near the end of the night, entirely because it looked like you wanted to be alone. But glad you were there nonetheless. Thanks, Greg and Lamont. I appreciate you understanding that I was having some alone time with my cookie. Table 19, which is the table that I was at, was great. Bunch of real, like, poker players, man. They were not messing around at all. I was in awe of how good they were. Saw Marley Caden, saw the homie Richard Roper. We laughed at the White Sox together. It was great. Dan did a great job of emceeing. That's why he's not here right now. Saw Parkins and Spiegel and Shane. It was a good time.
Yeah. Dan was like, are you coming tonight? And I'm like, Dan, I have this job that I do 5 days a week. Money can be exchanged for goods and services, but I wish you well.
Yes. This text says, "Lo, it's Lance from X." I don't know what that even means.
Except I think he means Twitter.
Except you're a celeb, bro. That's not... It's a very easy thing for you to say without acknowledging the fact that this might be like a mental health thing.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like when I say, like, I don't appreciate when people are rude, like, just actively rude, and it's like, oh, you like the attention. I think less of you now. Whatever, boomer. Like, get over yourself. Boundaries are real. Shut up.
Shut up, yo.
Okay, so all of that said...
Do you think that the Bulls are going to win because Jimmy Butler is not playing?
No. I actually think that Alex Caruso is probably more injured than we realize, and he'll probably try to give it a go, but... With no Caruso and, frankly, an already depleted Bulls team, and I don't know how much gas Andre Drummond has left in the tank, even though he did do some amazing things to become available on Wednesday, I am skeptical. I am very skeptical Although Jimmy's out, like he's out for like the foreseeable future. If they were to make it and even make it all the way to the finals, it would still be dicey.
Once I saw that people were pushing back against Shams's report, and I was like,
And then the
Heat—it's Shams.
And then the Heat said Jimmy Butler's out with an MCL sprain.
It's Shams. Shams knows what's up, and he always gets the story.
My bigger concern is that both injuries that we're discussing happened because of avoidable collisions. Kelly Oubre with Jimmy and Andre Drummond with Alex Caruso.
There's a lot of dancing on your partner's toes that was going on there.
Well, Oubre, it was an attempted defensive play that just failed. That one is probably more egregious. But still.
How do you feel about... You're one of the people, we're in the same category, about enjoying the play-in, like... The idea of the one and doneness of it. Dan and I were having a conversation yesterday about this. I'm so stuck, Layla, because I want the guys on the Bulls to win. But I know that if they do win, the management will hold this up as an example of this is how we're going to continue to do things and see it was successful. And I'm stuck. Because nothing would bring me more joy. I just got new furniture. So, like, I'm very excited to go sit on the new furniture and watch the Bulls. I got this big old chaise, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to sit on that and watch the Bulls. I love to see them win, but I know what the effect of it. We've seen it so many times that at the end of this, it's like, see, we told you we had the right formula. We were the 8th seed.
And now imagine if we were healthy. Oh,
yeah.
Zach LaVine.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a personal theory, and it's not founded with any information. It just feels like knowing the history of AK and the history of Mark Eversley and how they got their respective teams before this to their positions in the postseason and their longevity. I wonder how much of this is a ownership directive to simply make the playoffs. And when I say playoffs, I mean postseason. Because they're the only team in the NBA in 3 years, as I mentioned to Nick Friedel earlier, that didn't trade anybody at the deadline. That is an outlier. Like, however you want to look at it, that is just not what NBA teams do anymore, to not make a single trade. And to me, when you add it up, it would make sense. Re-signing Nikola Vucevic was a message. Giving Zach LaVine was the max. Giving Zach LaVine the max was also a message. I feel like the difference, though, is at the time Zach LaVine was asset protection. But you decided how you wanted this team to look for a very long time when you made those decisions. And when you decided to not trade Alex Caruso, for example, who had great value. So for me, I just wonder what the end game is, you know, or what the directive is from their bosses. Is that crazy?
No, it's not. And that's one of the things that we were considering yesterday, that the idea of, well, the United Center is full. People are happy when they go to Bulls games.
There was some change that occurred.
Is that the actual end game? And should we as fans be okay with that? Like, is there a space where we should just be happy with, we were entertained? Like,
we're not happy, but we're not the ones who own the team.
But I'm saying, like, if you and I, like, if we were to go to one of the playoff games, like, let's say the Bulls win and they have a home game at the United Center. You and I, we go get tickets and we go sit in the 200 level. We're going to have a blast, right? Mm-hmm. Win or lose.
Absolutely.
So is that enough? Is the organization doing enough because you're getting a product that entertained you for 3 hours in your night? Now, I would say no, but I can't dismiss the idea of, I understand what that model is. My problem is, if that's your model, I want you to tell me that that's your model. And I think that they're trying to tell you that, but they're trying to, like, thread the needle and have it both ways.
But think about the discussion we have with all the Chicago teams recently and the actions behind them. The Cubs emphasized the importance of actually being the bottom seed in the playoffs and how that worked to teams' advantage. You know, the discussion is just get into the postseason. And people like Dan say variance will take care of the rest. That's not enough for me. You know that. That is not how I feel. Especially when I have examples of teams knowing that they needed to be way better than that and that working in their favor. Think about all the trades the Knicks made. And you could easily say, oh, well, just get in. No, they want to win the Eastern Conference. And if they were healthy, this wouldn't be a discussion. You know, that's what I'm talking about. So teams are never going to tell you that. They're going to tell you what they value. And for example, the value of just making the playoffs is the lowest seed in the National League. The value of making the play-in and showing you the example of the team that got all the way to the finals. You know, that's, yes, you lost to that team. But would your path have been the same?
Well, we might get a chance to find out because there's going to be no one who's going to pick the Bulls to beat the Celtics if they were to win this game, right?
And there's no reason that you have no evidence to prove it otherwise. Prove me wrong, people. Well, and when I mean people, I mean the Bulls. Prove me wrong. I love it. I loved what I saw on Wednesday. That was a great game. That was exactly what you wanted to see. The shape of the offense changed. Repeat it again. Max Strus isn't on the other side, and he was lethal against the Bulls last time out in this.
Yeah, but Tyler Hero's healthy, so that could be problematic.
But that's my point, is every team has been able to withstand injuries to an extent in the NBA that is successful right now. You're not the only ones who have done so.
We need to take a break. When we come back, I want to offer a piece of evidence into the idea of people who run teams aren't always smarter than folks that just watch and talk about teams.
You mean that whole have faith in ex-GM isn't always really worth having faith in?
You nailed it. It's Bernstein and Holmes. Lawrence and Layla here with you until Cubs baseball on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes.
Mike C. Nelson. Now we know his name is Keith from the Progressive Becoming Your Parents commercials.
The White Sox. I can't believe they did more due diligence on hiring a play-by-play guy than a GM.
Middays 10 a.m. till 2.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable to root for that team.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
You're one of us.
You're one of us, Mike.
What? What are you thinking?
Jaden Daniels, Drake May at the same damn time. Michael Penix, Bo Nix at the same damn time.
You know what you shouldn't do? Interview all the quarterbacks at the same damn time.
So a lot of times the teams are put into a role of authority because they're the teams and they always do things right.
That's why they always have the highest picks in the draft.
Right.
Because of all the right things that they do.
So Layla.
Not talking about the Bears.
By the way, it's Bernstein and Holmes, Lawrence and Layla here with you until Cubs baseball. This morning, I went to, because, you know, like, did the whole thing, had to freak out, and then went right to sleep last night. So I got up early.
Woke up.
Freak out. Do you know what that song is based on? So that song, they were at studio. They were trying to get into Studio 54, which is one of the lyrics. And Nile Rodgers told the story, I think. And he said that the bouncer told them as they were trying to get in, they were like, well, we're a band. And the bouncer told them to bleep off.
That's hilarious.
So he said, well, we couldn't say that in the song. So we decided to change it to freak out.
That's great.
That's how they created the song. Anyway,
they took strife and they made it into art.
This morning, I woke up a little earlier than usual, and there was some really great stuff. I did a whole thread of it on Twitter. So if you're following me on Twitter and Instagram, by the way, mine is at Lawrence W. Holmes. There was a really great piece that was done by Scott Docterman, who was on the show earlier this week. And he was talking about how kids that are fringe 5th, 6th, 7th rounders are going back to school. And it makes sense. There was the Jeff Agress piece about NBC Sports Chicago and the stadium that I think everyone should read. And I put it all in a thread along with this from Mike Florio.
Yes.
Oh, and Josh Schrock's piece about Caleb Williams. That is a must read.
Strongly recommend Josh Schrock, and it's not just because I work with him.
It's his Caleb piece and thinking back on it, it's the best Caleb piece I've read. So if it's all in my thread, you can check it out from this morning. But one of the other things that I saw that I thought that we could talk about a little bit is this from Mike Florio, who usually is on with us on Wednesdays. This is what Washington decided to do with the quarterbacks that aren't named Caleb Williams.
It seems dysfunctional to me on the surface to do that. And I know that somebody reported that Adam Peters, they did that in San Francisco. I feel like this is just, well, the owner's available this day and he wants to meet with all these guys, so this is the day we want them all to be here. Why would you dilute your ability to get maximum time and just an opportunity to evaluate? You're trying to evaluate four guys at once because the glass half full story is, well, you want to see how they interact with each other. But you're trying to keep track of these four different guys. Like, why would you not? You've got 30 of these visits you can do. Why would you not bring them in one at a time and have maximum opportunity to get to know them individually?
I don't understand that either. I mean, I really don't. It's definitely odd to me. First off, why do we care about how they four would interact together? Like, they're not going to be together. So who the hell cares?
They're never going to be together again.
Who the hell cares? Like, I mean, so
at the draft, maybe. But no, some of them aren't even going to be at the draft.
No, that makes no sense at all.
Yes, that's courtesy of Pro Football Talk. And that's Mike Florio and Chris Sims. I have no idea. The point that Chris Sims made is the immediate point that I had. I don't give a bleep how Caleb Williams interacts with Jaden Daniels because guess what? They're not going to be teammates.
That's never going to happen.
They're not going to be teammates.
Also, you've seen it. You know when you've seen it? Heisman Trophy weekend.
Correct.
Like, what are we doing here? You know how they interact with each other when things are on the line and job interviews are happening and potential opportunities are there. Do you not know about the Heisman Trophy process where they all hang out together? What? Come on, man.
So then Ray saw something, which, coming from someone who I really respect and really like, I was surprised at the content. Ray, what did you find?
Yeah, so I'm pulling up the tweet here as we speak, but Louis Riddick tweeted, and Mully and Haw had a great discussion about this morning as well.
They did. He tweeted on the Rewind app.
Yeah, he tweeted, had a great discussion with a personnel man that I trust a few hours ago. Question he had for me, why isn't Chicago being scrutinized more for seemingly deciding a while ago on the direction they will go at quarterback while Washington is being questioned about their process of gathering intel as we speak before making a definitive decision at quarterback? This is a career-defining / franchise-altering move for both teams. You must be sure as you can. You must be sure as possible. The kind of discussion I love. The debate is real. So Louis Riddick is saying, okay, he doesn't think this is necessarily a bad thing Washington is doing, and why aren't the Bears getting more scrutiny for not, you know, for zeroing in on Caleb like they did?
Well, I think both can be true, but not necessarily because of each other. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I think, yes, the Bears had decided, and who knows when that decision was made, frankly. The Bears have decided that is who they want. They want Caleb Williams. They want to build around him. You're seeing how it is with clear intent in their roster decisions and offensive coordinator decisions that they've made, coaching decisions. I would argue that you could have maybe seen what the other quarterback did with that, but we knew that was not the case. I never said that they should trade that pick because we all knew what was going to happen, didn't we?
Here's my issue. I think that it's fair to wonder about zeroing in on one candidate. Now, when you've got the number one pick, though, and you know that pick is going to be available and you've done the due diligence, I'm okay with it. Like, I wasn't happy with the Bears doing that in a situation where they were going to have to give away assets to get the person that they had zeroed in on.
Oh, you mean like the Bears front office has done in the past?
Correct. To me, these two things are not connected. And I think it's weird that this scouting person tried to connect them. The Washington thing is just bizarre. You should want to have as much time with each individual candidate as possible. And the idea of bringing all of them in the same time period, to me, while it might be, well, we're trying to be efficient with our time, I don't think that you're getting the best out of the time that you're spending with each candidate.
Also, what are you trying to prove here? You know, I used to openly mock when NFL teams used to have to hire consulting firms in order to get searches done. But junk like this makes me realize that they should. Because how do you not have some sort of system in place that says, instead of setting people up to fail, how about we see what their ceiling is and try to get the best version out of them and then figure out who we thought was the best for that discussion process or what we value in our quarterback. Like, that was the nice thing about what Matt Eberflus said at the Combine. He told you what he needed to see in somebody. And that's not this. You're not testing people for that in this case.
It's why I really appreciated what Caleb said at the Combine. It's kind of how I've always felt about this. He basically was like, there's a whole bunch of tape. You've got 35 games of tape that you can watch and you can figure it out. Everyone, since I've been covering the league, and this is 2003 when I started covering the league closely, everyone in the league thinks that they're a psychologist. Well, we have this thing that we've put together and this battery of tests that we're going to run with these quarterbacks. This will allow us to figure it out. And then they almost always get it wrong.
Chick, you ain't got no process that's worked. That's why you're in this mess to begin with.
Right. The hit rate is not good. And it's definitely not good for Washington.
And that's the point that we're trying to make. How many executive changes did they make once the team changed hands? That's another piece of this too. But to me, I think we've all been through jobs where the interview process tried to set me up to fail and like tested me. And I'm like, if you're more worried about how I'm going to mess up than you are how I'm going to succeed, then I don't need to be working for you. And they don't have that choice here.
Yeah. And
but this is not how you build winning organizations.
What's up, Ray?
Well, I just wanted to say, if it's one thing I've learned as a Bears fan, it's that, and watching silliness from bad front offices, is don't get too cute. Don't get too cute. Like you said, Lawrence, don't trade away exorbitant amounts of assets to move up to get a guy who nobody else is really looking at, Mitch Trubisky. And don't bring in four prospects for one day and have them all sit together or whatever this situation was. It's just silly.
It's making people fail because you don't know how to do your job properly.
A texter has it right. If Washington had the first pick, would they still have their quarterback gathering? No, they would pick Williams. You are correct. And look, I'm not here to tell you that Caleb Williams is the right pick. I think that the entire way that we look at and discuss quarterbacks is flawed. So in a sense, I applaud Washington for trying to do different stuff, but this seems stupid to me. Not every new idea is a good one.
Like, especially coming from teams where you know they haven't had a lot of new good ideas.
Correct. Going against the status quo to go against the status quo to me is bizarre. And I don't imagine it's going to work, but we'll see. Maybe they'll make their decision and Jaden Daniels will be their pick or J.J. McCarthy will be their pick and it'll be fine. Probably not, though.
Okay, so we got a tweet that I think is valid because it's worth refuting.
Okay.
Somebody says to our post about this on Twitter, this is what they do in San Francisco. They don't bring in guys by themselves. SEL'S. They bring in large groups of guys. Adam is just doing the same thing. SF seems to be doing just fine. LOL. San Francisco has one of the best coaching staffs in all of the National Football League.
I would also
let's talk about the last time they drafted a quarterback, which was a colossal failure. They got lucky with the last pick in the draft. So I would say that your argument is not true. There was luck there, and there's also the fact that they had proper systems in place and more established coaches and an established infrastructure. So no, I would say that failed, actually.
I can't add anything to that. That's Layla Rahimi. I'm Lawrence Holmes. Burstein at Holmes, Lawrence and Layla, here with you until Cubs baseball. When we come back, Tim Anderson is back in town.
He looks healthier.
Why don't we talk about, I wonder if he's in a healthier space. We'll let you hear from TA and we'll discuss it next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. And 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Anderson. Hits it in the air to right. Back at the wall, and the White Sox win it.
Happier times when TA was a White Sox and things were looking good for the White Sox. And there was the game in the corn, and he's got the chains on. He's doing like this as he's crossing home plate. Things were good. And then things got bad.
Yes, they did.
And they got bad in a hurry. They got bad for TA on the field. They got even worse for TA.
The corn game.
For TA off the field. And he did the Pivot podcast and talked about that last year. And then, of course, they don't pick up his option, $12 million option for this year. He becomes a free agent, signs for $5 million on a one-year deal down in Miami. TA is back in Chicago playing on the north side as the Marlins take on the Cubs. We will have pregame for you starting at 12:45 today. Zach Zaman will be on the call for pregame. This is what TA said, because the clubhouse was open before they decided to bang the game yesterday. This is what TA had to say about not being back with the White Sox and what the last couple years were like for him.
Feels good. You know, I'm in a happy place, you know, and I'm getting the work in that I need, and just excited, you know, about my future.
What does it mean to you to come to Chicago, though? First time as in a different uniform.
Mm-hmm. It's exciting, you know, to come back, you know, to play the Cubs. I guess it feels okay, you know.
A fresh start. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs it from time to time. How much did the burden of, as Tim Anderson goes, the White Sox goes?
Yeah,
was it nice to have it gone, and how hard was it?
Yeah, for sure, definitely. You know, I'm glad that definitely, you know, gone, because, you know, it definitely takes a whole team to win. And, you know, finally to be from, you know, under the umbrella is, you know, now I can play the game free and, you know, just play my role.
You could never say it was time for me to go somewhere else. But was that in your thoughts when you were dealing with injuries and not being able to help the team for the last few years?
Yeah, that was in my thoughts, you know, throughout that process, because, you know, I asked for extensions, you know, year after year. So, you know, that's always, you know, been in my thought process, and understanding that, you know, you're not going to always spend, you know, your whole season, I mean, your whole career with one team. And I understood that. I mean, and we all know how, you know, how it works.
Tim, how do you hope the Sox fans look back on your eight seasons?
However they want to. You know, however they want to. It's not really, you know, up to me. I just know, you know, the last year that I spent there was tough. And, you know, and then finally to be able to, you know, make it through and be on the other side, you know, I'm happy. I'm in a great place. You know, my smile's back. And I'm back to, you know, back on my journey.
Inside of that conversation, he also talked about the off-the-field stuff, too, and how it was – that played a role in his level of happiness. What I'm hearing there, Layla, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, the burden of leadership is not for everybody.
No. And I feel like on that White Sox team, we talked about it a lot. And we asked who the leader was a lot. I actually think that in cases like that, it's almost blaming people. Like, it's just be yourself. And then they list all these things they want you to be, which maybe you have those qualities and maybe you don't, which is inherently not being yourself. But when it came to TA talking about this, after we've heard Jose Abreu talk about this, after we heard what we heard about what went on in that clubhouse, it all starts to add up, doesn't it?
Yes. I also think that we do this, like the royal we, meaning everyone that's like a observer or a fan.
Consumer.
We expect that there are some people, because of who they are, that they are meant to lead.
The quarterback, the shortstop.
And that isn't always that person's personality. And it's, I think that there are elements of TA's personality that do lend itself to leadership. but wanting to be the guy, it's hard. Like, it's hard to lead a group of your peers. And it takes a little something to be able to do it. I want Tim Anderson to be happy as a ball player. I really like him, and my interactions with him were, I would say, 95% good. But he was clearly in a bad place, like that last year. He brought so much excitement to the South Side, to White Sox baseball. It's hard for me to forget that, even with how badly things went the last two seasons. I hope that he's as happy as he sounds.
I think he looks like he's healthier. He at one point was very, very, for him, skinny. And, you know, sometimes I feel like that indicates stress, you know, when somebody's weight changes like sure. that. And especially when you're an athlete, you know, we ask about that. Either it's purposeful, like when Eloy Jimenez does it, but you could just tell how this had worn on him. And he does talk about his actions. It's not like he didn't take responsibility for his specific actions. But either way, when you add up what happened and the postmortem that we continue to get for a run that should have been a lot more fruitful, these are lessons. These are lessons from people who are there. And if we don't listen, then we're doing all of them a disservice.
Today, the Cubs start their series at home against the Marlins. Pregame coverage starts at 12:45, first pitch at 1:20. Then later, the Bulls take on the Heat in the NBA play-in tournament. Pregame coverage starts at 5:45. Tip-off is at 6. The only local broadcast of the game can be heard here on 670 The Score. Why don't we talk a little bit more about TA and where the White Sox are? Because we're going to talk with our buddy Jim Margulis of Sox Machine. Next on The Score.
Sack Machine.